Our next speaker is Monica Moskal, and she is a specialist in applied spatial temporal multi-scale modeling. I practiced that all the way here, spatiotemporal. Modeling of forest and vegetation characteristics, patterns, and processes using remote sensing, GIS, and geospatial techniques. Her work is especially interesting because she emphasizes making sure that folks who are working on these systems are also out in the field seeing the natural systems that they're modeling with. I'm going to turn it over to Monica. She needs to get out of here as soon as her talk's done. So.
Thank you, Joan. You've probably seen some fact sheets that are related to this project. There's contact information on those if you would like to have a discussion. I'm more than happy to make the time to talk to each and every one of you. Unfortunately, I have a previous engagement happening right after this talk. So I will be talking about arid wetlands. And that is probably an oxymoron. It kind of seemed to be one to me when I first got introduced to this problem. You might have noticed that my specialty is also in forestry, but it really is in remote sensing and applying the science of remote sensing to study ecosystems. So wetlands, arid wetlands, especially the techniques that I'm going to introduce to you, come traditionally out of forestry and the application of remote sensing in forestry, but they're quite usable in other landscapes. And of course, arid wetlands, so we're on the east side of Washington. This is a pilot project that we're collaborating with the Nature Conservancy. And just to stress why arid wetlands are extremely important, these are areas that are already sensitive to climate change. So any type of change in water resources is likely to impact these wetlands fairly quickly. In fact, small decline in precipitation can have significant impacts on these arid areas. Increasingly, the arid regions face political and social issues as well with water rights, water utilization as we look at urban expansion, agricultural use, growing corn for biomass requires water resources. So we have to think about these systems and how they're integrated with the rest of the human utilization of the landscape, but also how they integrate with what is happening to our climate. So as the effects of climate and human use amplify the changes of these landscapes, we have to try and make wise conservation decisions. And this is why the Nature Conservancy came to us to work on this project. They're interested in conserving, managing landscapes that have a diversity in these wetlands. So when you think about diversity, I definitely know my bias on diversity. I look at the landscapes from a spatial perspective, and I think of diversity as spatial diversity. But of course, there's other types of diversities as well, biodiversity, the life associated with these wetlands. This is not something that I'm going to be talking about, but I definitely feel that it's an integrated approach that needs to be applied to this conservation. So the first step is to see where you have these wetlands and what they've been doing over time. I think the final step is to evaluate how our policies are actually conserving and managing wisely and sustainably managing these critical areas. And just to map here, some work summarizing the loss of wetlands within the state of Washington. We've lost about 31% of our wetlands between 1780 to 1980. So in the span of 200 years, there's been a dramatic loss in these wetlands. Now, what is remote sensing? Remote sensing is a science that utilizes the application of either aerial or satellite imagery, and in fact, these days, terrestrial sensors as well, to study landscapes. At least in my expertise, we look at a landscape level. And remote sensing has been greatly utilized to try and look at wetlands. The EPA uses satellite imagery to study at wetlands. Regional agencies use aerial imagery to study wetlands as well. Unfortunately, with the satellite approach, we use a sensor that has a resolution or a pixel size of about 30 meters. So we're summarizing an area the size of that room with one value, which means that wetlands that are smaller than 1.5 hectare are difficult to extract from that type of imagery. Aerial imagery has much greater resolution. In fact, we can have aerial photographs within 1-inch pixel resolution. In fact, we have those data sets in a historical fashion as well, going back to the 1930s. However, aerial imagery, does not have color often associated with it. It's also very time intensive to try and analyze aerial imagery. I believe that both data sets are actually quite useful. Landsat or satellite imagery provides us with reflective information that can add additional content to analysis of wetlands. Aerial imagery provides the spatial component and a longer historical span. Satellite imagery can look back in time till about the 1970s. In fact, Landsat is 1972. Aerial imagery, we can look back till about the 1930s in some areas of the state, especially coastal areas and urban areas, 1940s, 1950s in rural and less residential areas. So the big question that I always keep in the back of my mind when I'm looking at this project, and I would like you to think about throughout this talk, is really, what is a wetland? We all have a different bias and a different perspective, and I'll show you mine. So we're looking at an arid wetland here in eastern Washington, one of the areas that we studied. This could be the open body of a wetland, and you could delineate that and characterize that as a wetland. Someone else might consider this additional vegetation, which is associated with the wetlands, to be part of the wetland as well. And basically, we're using the darkness in vegetation to identify that grouping of species to do this delineation. Or we might use some additional species that are also associated with wetlands and delineate a wetland that way. I actually showed you a pretty easy example. This is an arid wetland, which is not wet. There's no water in this wetland. A little harder to delineate here. How about this? This is also an arid wetland, fully vegetated, but it is a wetland. How do you delineate this wetland? How about this? Where is the boundary? Where does the wetland start? Where does it end? The person in the image here is an expert on wetlands. He is working for the Nature Conservancy and, in fact, helped to train my students that are working on this project. And we know he's an expert because he can grab a shovel, dig down, and tell you if the soils associated with a specific area are wetland soils. This is truly the definitive method of delineating or knowing if you're in a wetland. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to do that at a landscape level. So delineating wetlands this way would be time-consuming and probably detrimental to the wetland as well. But I do strongly believe that this work requires a field component, and it requires going on the ground and validating the efforts that we do. So, in fact, that's exactly what we do. We go on the ground with a high-definition global positioning system, submeter resolution, and we delineate wetlands out in the field. We did this even before we started the project. To me, this was the training for my student. The method that I'm presenting here today requires the analyst to be trained to do this type of interpretation. And I think the best way to do that is to be on the ground and learn about what the wetlands look like on the ground. So this is the application of geospatial technologies. She has a global positioning system with her. In fact, she has the whole GIS database in her hand for that study area as well on a portable computer. I said I was going to show you my my perspective, and I think a good way to do that is just to look at Google Earth. I'm going to demonstrate a little bit of this approach to give you an idea of the things that we think about when we look at wetlands from the remote sensing perspective. This is an arid wetland area viewed from the 1940s, same area. 1950s. Notice the change in color. This is due to the different type of year of the imagery. Same area in the 1970s. Notice that we're starting to use color imagery closer to our time. And here's the area currently. And in fact, we don't even know the date from Google Earth of this particular acquisition. Notice the shift in the imagery. These are all issues that remote sensing needs to address and correct. The new trends in remote sensing are looking at temporal and spatial and spectral resolutions. And I think it's the combination of looking at space, time, and spectral information. I'm not going to get too much into that, but imagine being able to see into the near infrared. With remote sensing, we can. Utilizing these three things, we can develop a very sophisticated tool that allows us to be a little bit more of an expert at analyzing wetlands. This is, in fact, our full approach summarized. We're using aerial photography and extracting the shape of the wetlands over time, calling that a spatial temporal signature. And we're using satellite data and looking at the color changes, that's the simplistic way of saying it, of these wetlands over time, calling that the spectral temporal signature. Then we use a hierarchical feature extraction approach, which is a little different from the traditional remote sensing approach, but really the key is image analyst training and skills. So I'm going to demonstrate that right now and train you a little bit. Any idea what we're looking at here? All right, I'll ask the question a little differently. How many puppies do you see in this picture? When I said that, how many of you actually saw the puppies? A few hands going up. That's kind of a weird thing that happened in your brain. All of a sudden, you're seeing what I'm talking about. I'll tell you, this is a nose, this is an eye, this is an eye, and that's an ear. Can you see the facial features of a puppy? So how many puppies in this image? There are actually five of them. If you do a very good job, you'll notice there's another one hidden back here. Think about what your brain just did. Computers cannot do this. You've used context and association. And in fact, as soon as I said puppies, I did see about five hands go, I see puppies in the picture. So there are good image analysts and there are very good image analysts. The very good ones are the ones who are trained. So this is precisely what we do with our method. We train the computer using very traditional sort of methods, similar to traditional remote sensing. But the features that we look at in our training are very sophisticated. Instead of just using the color in the imagery, we look at shape, texture, variables, hierarchy. I don't have the time to go into all of those things, but every process that we do requires image interpretation. So an analyst is married to the computer and trains the computer step by step how to analyze the image, and creates what we call an algorithm. This is the logistic algorithm that you're looking at. It's actually quite simplistic, the mathematical language behind the classification. This is the final classification, and we are delineating wetlands. We've compared our results to Fish and Wildlife delineation of wetlands from 1982. That's the red lines. The green are emergent wetlands that we've identified. The blue are open water that we've identified. You can tell we're identifying almost 10 times the area of emergent wetlands. Of course, with every step, we need to assess the accuracy of this. That means going back on the ground. Finally, phase two multispectral change. Don't have time to talk about it. Spatial pattern analysis, I also don't have time to talk about it, but I'll very quickly show you. Emergent wetland, look at the ruggedness of the, emergent is the green, open water is the blue. Look at the ruggedness of the edge. That's a shape metric. We can use those things to help us identify things a little bit better and hopefully produce better wetland delineation. So, some recommendation, invest in the image analyst. The field experience is critical. Feature extraction is an interesting technique, but it requires that investment. More expensive imagery isn't always the answer, but using the appropriate remote sensing technique to the imagery is the goal. Finally, using multiple data sets, combining them, aerial photos and multispectral satellite imagery, all of the data that we use is free. So, and both are available for free. Why not use both instead of just concentrating on a methodology that explores one? Finally, exploring LIDAR. LIDAR is a remote sensing technique that uses a laser like this, and it times the return of the laser to the sensor. It gives you topographic information, and as you can imagine, knowing the topography will help with delineation of wetlands, even if you might not have water at the time of the imagery that you're taking. So I think that with combination of aerial photos and with the combination of satellite imagery is what will yield landscape pattern analysis of the wetlands. Again, field validation, the algorithm can be refined at any time, and I think we're going to go back out in the field in March. When we do, we'll use that information to refine our algorithm. This is a little different than the traditional remote sensing when you only validate with the field data. I don't want to lose out on that data. I think it's important, and we can do a better job with it. The final goal, this is really a PhD phase for the student that's working on this, is tying this to policy, looking at the human interaction and the human decisions that are impacting the landscape. So, of course, I couldn't have done this without the help of students as well as the Nature Conservancy folks. And Megan Halabisky is looking for field assistants to go back out with her in March. If you have some time, want to go out and look at arid wetlands, that's her email address. Feel free to contact her. I'll take questions now. Yes?
Fantastically excited for an old man. Please get this type of reporting done into high schools. You guys are wonderful.
Thank you. So suggestion going out to high school in public, and I truly believe in that. In fact, I am part of a group that's going to be presenting how we use satellite data at the Pacific Science Center to look at the Earth and learn about the Earth. I think we'll have some products there within the next 6 months or so. Thank you. Any other questions?
Can you talk about the policy interface a little bit and what you see coming out of that?
Policy is not my area of expertise. So all I can say is that we have a unique program and some unique students in our college. It's a degree that combines resource management and technical skills with a degree at the Evans School of Policy. And faculty who interact with us that are affiliates at the school or actually professors in the school. So we rely on their expertise. I truly believe that research needs to be interdisciplinary, and those boundaries need to span past the traditional sort of disciplines that I would be interacting with, like landscape ecologist, biologist. So policy is a very new area for me to engage with.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Musk.
One last question.
This is arid wetlands, and obviously forested wetlands have been much more difficult. Can you comment on
It is much more difficult. Forested wetlands can be covered by large vegetation. I think this is where LIDAR will really shine. I think it will allow us to look at the structural vegetation that's covering some of the wetland. I do believe it's the combination of the tools that will have to be utilized to answer the questions on the western side. In a few areas where we do have trees, we know we can actually extract them using these type of algorithms. But I think we would need a more powerful data set to do that. Thanks.
One more.
Oh, yep. We've thought about that, and one of the ideas is that the spectral signatures, which I really didn't have time to describe, but the stuff that we can get out of the satellite Landsat data can indicate minerals as well as how well the water is dissolving things, which could potentially allow us to think about, is the wetland groundwater fed or not? But we know that's something we would want to look into, and we're actually trying to see if we can pull things apart in our data set, at least just groundwater fed and not. But we're not there just yet, so I can't answer that. Thank you.